Well, hello. How are you? Well, welcome to the show. My name is Michael Croze. This is Ask the Garden Geek, and I am here to geek you out, man. That's why I'm here, man. I'm just here to geek you out. What does that mean? We've been having some exciting talks lately. I mean, some talks that if I tell, you know, when I tell people what I have talked about, like on last week's show, they said, and your audience was actually awake through the whole thing. If I had to hear a lecture on, you know, a pesticide label, I would, you know, probably want to do something like drink heavily. But I said, no. As a matter of fact, I've gotten really good emails on that. And with more questions, with more boring stuff. So guess what? More boring stuff coming your way in just a few moments. In just a few moments, more incredibly boring stuff that I, your garden geek, I will make sound exciting and wonderful. And I will take you places. And I shall move you through the process, as they said. But first, I got to tell you, it's been really cold this week, in the Northeast especially. But, you know, I am a gentleman from the land of the palm trees, and it's been cold here. But it's going to be warm tomorrow. I'm recording this on Thursday night. But tomorrow, which is Friday, February 1st, amazingly enough, we're going to get into the 70s again. Just like that. After it being cold, we're going to go into the 70s. I am very thankful. I am so thankful that I got my Dyson super duper, fan that has a heater and an air purifier in it. It is, and I have nothing to do with the Dyson people. I will tell you, they make really damn good vacuum cleaners. And then I found out that, oh yeah. And I was in Palm Beach. It's been over three years since I've been to Palm Beach, but I was in Palm Beach once and I went to a fancy dancy rib place down there, and I went to the men's room where I washed my hands, and they had a Dyson hand dryer in there. And I got to tell you, that was the coolest darn thing I ever seen in my life. I had wet hands. I walked over there. I said, this is not going to work. And you stick your hands in this thing, just, you know, you go down and back up. By the time I went down and back up, my hands were perfectly dry and nothing touched anything from anybody. It was a miracle. Well, then this year, I don't know. I've been watching this Dyson bladeless fan, and I was watching it on one of the home shopping channels. I think it was QVC. I was watching it, and I said, that looks pretty cool. And the guy says, hey, it gives you this wonderful heat, and it'll, you know, you can make it fan out, and it'll heat the whole room, or you can direct it right to you, and the thing will oscillate, it'll go back and forth. And I said, that's pretty good. Then they said the price, which was, you know, it was outrageous. And I went on Dyson's website. It was like 400 and some bucks. I said, no. You know, no, I'm saving my money from my new lawnmower, my electric lawnmower. And I said, I can't buy that thing. I said, I want to buy that thing, but I cannot buy that thing. So one day I was looking for a piece of audio equipment, and I went to eBay. And right there on the front page was those Dyson fans. I said, I wonder how much you can get one of these things for on eBay. And I got a factory refurbished one, and it was on sale, and it was $186. Oh, I pulled the trigger. I bought it. I said, that's it. I'm buying it. I bought it. It took forever to come. I ordered it before Christmas, and it came sometime in January. But I got to tell you, it lives up to the word. It's got a little remote control. I love this thing. Anyway, it has kept me toasty warm. I have not turned on the heat in my house in the evening while I'm up. I just, out in the living room, I turn that thing on, and it heats that whole front of my house. And it does a great job. Let me take a swig of Diet Coke here. Hang on. That's so good. Anyway, I don't edit. I just, you know, most people would shut off the microphone for a minute, take the swig of Diet Coke. Not me. I just go on. Love that thing. Then I shut it off when I go to bed, and I leave the heat off, and I crawl under my covers, and I go to sleep. And I've been waking up in the morning, and it's been 60 degrees in the house and 61 degrees in the house. And I immediately turn on my heat pump and get that cranking and turn on the Dyson and get it super warm super fast so that I can survive out in the world. Other interesting news is on this coming Wednesday, I'm having a cataract removed. I went to the eye doctor today, and I'm getting a cataract, a big old cataract removed, which thank the Lord. And I'm just, I've been suffering with this thing long enough, and I went to a new doctor today, first time, and they're measuring me on Monday, and Wednesday they're going to go and take the thing out, just like that. So I'm excited about that. Now, let's get on to the boring stuff, if we can. You know, I've done some very interesting talks about fertilizers that were boring. I've done interesting talks about insects that were boring, but they weren't boring because I made them good. I've had several questions this week when I was talking about fertilizer about minor elements and the importance of minor elements. So let's get into this. What are minor elements? That is the, or if you look on a fertilizer bag or a plant food bag, you'll have the three main numbers, the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And then you'll have, on not all, but on the good fertilizers, they might have a statement of secondary nutrients. That's the minor elements. Well, what are minor elements? Well, they're minerals. You know, they're boron. They're zinc. They're copper. There's, you know, all kinds of iron. All kinds of stuff like that that all make molybdenum. All these stuff make up the minor elements. And why are they important? Do you remember, are you old like me? Do you remember sometime in the 80s, you know how people would pass out cassette tapes trying to get you involved in some kind of a network marketing thing? And there was one of those tapes that kept getting passed around. I probably, because I'm in radio, I was in radio then, I probably got 30 of those tapes. And it was called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And it's about this guy, as it turns out, he's a veterinarian, but he, you know, he doesn't act like a veterinarian, but he, you know, he's out selling minerals. And I will admit that there's a product of his that I use. I do not sell his product, but there is a, when I got really sick 5 years ago, and I was coming, I came home, and I was, you know, I needed to recover. I needed to rebuild my health. I just went back to what I knew, that I needed to take minerals. And I remember this guy from that tape, and I had also done some other reading on him. And he had a mineral powder. It was a soluble powder that you took scoops of it and put it in water and drank it. And it also had vitamins and all kinds of other stuff in it. And it, the name of it was Tangy Tangerine or something like it was. You know, and you said, oh, it's going to be like having Tang. You know, you're going to put it in to dissolve it, and it should taste delicious. It tasted terrible. But when I was at the bottom of everything, and I mean, just, I got home, I was, you know, December 1st, went in the hospital. December 21st, I went into rehab. January 9th, I got out of rehab, came home, and had to rebuild my health. And I bought this stuff, and I started taking it. And the stuff isn't cheap. It's like $65 or $68 for a thing of it, a container of it. And I was taking that every day. And the minor elements in that, essentially, and because it was in a liquid form, I could absorb it very well. And it rebuilt my health. It just really did. And I credit that product. I probably did 3 months of it straight. And I couldn't afford it then. I have to tell you, man, I had not been working, and I had, you know, but I found the money to buy that for 3 months. And I bought it from a different person every month. I didn't want to, you know, buy it because, you know, as soon as you buy it, they say, hey, you want to be out? No, I don't want to be a, you know. So I would go on the internet, and I'd find somebody selling it, and I'd buy it from a different person every month. And the stuff kind of rebuilt my health. Well, minerals rebuild plants. And it's vitally important that plants get them, especially plants that you eat, okay? Anything that you eat. And there are products out there that are minor element products, and they're all kind of regional. I don't know of any national ones. But if you go to the garden center near you or the big box store near you and you go in there and you say you're looking for a minor element spray, I use that on anything that I grow that I eat. I use it on anything that I grow that is variegated that I want nice colors to. So I use it on those. I use it on spathiphylliums, which are houseplants that live well in low light. But when you add minor elements to a spathiphyllium, you got to see that bloom. I'm just telling you, it just looks beautiful. The color of the leaves look beautiful. So don't forget about minor elements or minerals for your plants. And by the way, don't forget about minerals for you. Now, I'm not saying go out and buy that product I'm talking about. There's lots of mineral products. I'm taking one now I bought at Walgreens. It's a capsule, and it's working. But I'm saying minerals are good. Somehow, I have the psychic feeling that you want to transplant some ligustrum bushes. I just kind of know this. Oh, hi, everybody. Welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. My name is Michael Crose. I am the geek here. And I got an email from someone in Jacksonville, Florida. And they're saying, "Dear Michael, how are you? Fine, I hope." No, they didn't say that. You know, when my sister taught me how to write letters when I was very young, she said, "When you're writing a letter, that's how you open it all the time. It's very nice. It's thoughtful. Always do that." So, you know, I text my son, Zach, and he works with me. I'll text him about something. I'll say, "Dear Zach, how are you? Fine, I hope." Anyway, and he just loves that. He just absolutely loves that. So it's just great. When he now texts his mother, he says, "Dear Mom, how are you? Fine, I hope." She knows that he got that from me, and she gets angry. Her head wants to explode. But that's okay, too. Anyway, oh gosh, I just have such fun these days. I really do. Why not? I'm old. Leave me alone. Anyway, guy has five ligustrums on the side of his property that he has to move because they're encroaching on his neighbors, and he wants to put them in his backyard. So he wants to know when is the best time to do it, and how do you do it? Well, that's what we're going to talk about. And it doesn't go just for ligustrums. It goes for any plant or small tree, or for that matter, large tree, if you are totally ambitious, that you want to transplant. I will tell you how I learned how to do it and how my students perfected how to do it. And, and by the way, this same method was used to move a giant tree, a giant oak tree, in downtown Clearwater several years ago by a friend of mine who has since passed. But he got hundreds of thousands of dollars for moving this tree so they could build this big building, but they didn't want to kill the tree. So they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to move the tree. I drove by the tree this morning. It's still alive and doing well. But this works with any plant that you want to transplant. And when is the best time to do it? The best time to do it is when the plant is not actively growing, like now. Of course, if you are in Poughkeepsie, New York right now, and it's 11 degrees, the ground is frozen. Now's not the best time. You know, fall probably would have been the best time, and spring, at the very beginning of spring, before it starts warming up a lot, but, before things started to grow, would also work. But I would prefer the fall. But if you're in most of the country, especially the southern part of the country, right now is just fine. Go do it. Now, how do I do that? The first thing I do is I go and I dig the hole where I'm going to move the plant to. In this case, this guy's got five holes to dig. Do that first. I learned that the hard way. Do that first and you'll be fine and happy and great. Life will be good. So you go dig the hole. Then I throw stuff in the hole. What do you throw in the hole? I throw some peat in there, I throw some perlite in there, and I throw something called Osmocote in there. Osmocote is a plastic coated, it's not really plastic, but it's kind of like plastic coated material that coats the fertilizer, which makes it release very slow as the soil temperature increases. So Osmocote will last for a long time, and it will spurn growth really, really well. And it's really good for root development, and it's just really healthy. So I mix that, I make a nice fluffy bed in the hole where the plant is going to go. I throw some Osmocote in there. I have peat in there. If I've got some black cow manure, toss some of that in there. Mix everything up. Just have a good time and, you know, make this really nice hole for your plant. Now it's time to come out and dig up the plant. Now, the most ideal way to dig up a plant is to go out on a shrub, for instance, is to go out to the end of the farthest branch and dig down, okay? That's called the drip line. Go out to the drip line and dig down. Not that is not always possible, but you want to go as far out from the trunk of the plant as you possibly can. Vitally important. Far out from the plant or the trunk of the plant as you can. Preferably the drip line. He should be able to do that with the ligustrums with no problem. And you start digging a trench all the way around, a little bit of time, just dig it out, go deeper, go deeper. You're going to start running into roots, cut through those roots, dig down, dig down, dig down. And then as you dig down, start digging in and loosening up the roots and get that plant out of the ground. Now, when you take the plant out of the ground, some people say, oh, wrap it in burlap. I say, if you're moving it right now, you know, if you're moving it to another location, you might want to burlap it. I never do. If I'm moving it to another property, I just throw it on the back of my pickup truck and I go. But I go right there. Okay, I go right there. But the very first thing that I do, and again, not a product that I am connected with at all or have nothing to do with other than the fact that I've been a customer for 30 years. And I use Super Thrive, a cap full of Super Thrive and a gallon of water. And I spray that all over those roots. I just spray that all over those roots. By the way, the last thing I do on the hole that I dug where the plant's going is I spray it down with Super Thrive. Okay? I do that. And why do I do this? Because Super Thrive has some magic ability. Don't ask me how. It has 50 vitamins and minerals. I talked about the importance of minerals with plants. Well, this is super infused minerals in this product, along with hormones and all kinds of other stuff. Just all kinds of stuff that is in there. And when you dig up this plant, even though it's dormant, you're going to knock this plant into shock. This plant's going to say, what are you doing to me? I hate you. Ah! You know, start freaking out. The plant is going to totally start freaking out, and you're going to unfreak out this plant by bathing the roots in Super Thrive. I put Super Thrive in a 1 gallon poly sprayer. I mix 1 capful of the Super Thrive in that 1 gallon of water and shake it up real good, mix it up, and I spray the bejeejees out of those roots. I get them as wet as I can. And then very quickly, you want to move over and you want to place that plant into the hole. Here's the next important thing, biggest mistake people make, okay? The top of the soil that the plant was in originally, you can't bury the top of the bottom of the plant lower than it was before. It has to be at exactly the same level. Do not put dirt onto the trunk of the plant. May have to throw some more dirt down on the bottom. You have to alien the thing out. Then the next important thing to do is pack that dirt in there and just pack it in. I use a shovel. Once I get it packed in as much as I can, I take a hose and I dribble water in there to push more dirt down there. And then I'm adding more dirt because you don't want air gaps. So you want to do everything you can to avoid air gaps. It's a little bit of an art form, but you can do it and you learn how to do it quick. It's easier than riding a bicycle. And it's easier than operating an iPad, and iPads are real easy to operate. So you just do that. Make sure you do not have air gaps. And then you water it, and that's what you do. And then you water it twice a day until, this time of year, probably 5 to 7 days, until you can reach on and grab that plant and pull on it, and roots are holding it into the ground. That is how we transplant. This is Ask the Garden Geek. I must check and make sure the microphone's on. Oh, it's on. because I'm looking at the computer and I see these little squiggly lines where I talk. Little squiggly lines where I talk. I taught a class last night, as a matter of fact, at the Tampa Bay Technology Center on podcasting. And we have a podcast studio at the Tampa Bay Technology Center that is almost identical to this studio that I have here in my home, which is kind of some good high-end equipment, by the way, some pretty nice high-end equipment that I have here. I'm very proud of the equipment I had here. And I was asked to help get a podcasting thing going there. And I said, well, you need a podcast studio. And that'll attract members because we can let our members use the podcast studio and I will teach a class on podcasting. So we had a speaker by the name of Chris Crementos who puts on a yearly event in Orlando called PodFest. PodFest. And look it up on Google. I'm going to be speaking there this year. And he was going to be a speaker last night. And we had bought, I, with the club's money, I said, well, we need everything that I have, but we need another microphone as well. So we got same mixer, we got same microphone, same microphone stands, we got all this stuff, and we, you know, put it all together, and, you know, all the cords, lots of cords, lots of cords. Why do we have all these cords? I don't know. But we had all of this stuff, and we had to put it together, and we had a room that was a room that had a bunch of computers in it. We got rid of all the computers and just turned it into a studio and then put seats in there. So it would be a classroom as well as a studio and also a studio audience if someone wanted to broadcast live. And we have it set up for radio shows to broadcast live from there. So if I ever do a live radio show again, I could do it from there and we could actually have a studio audience, which is really cool. So last night, we got that whole thing put together. Last night, Chris came and talked. And when that was all over, I showed off the studio and demonstrated how all of this stuff worked. And, you know, by the way, the software, which is vitally important, we run a very high-end software here out of this studio here at my home. And we got the same software, which is not cheap, for the studio there. And, you know, music, the guy that writes and produces all my music, we got a bunch of music from him to use there. So, you know, that we can use legally. So it was a fun experience. And I gave that talk last night. And I guess now I'm going to start teaching a class there on Wednesday nights. Not this Wednesday because I'm having cataract surgery this Wednesday. But the following Wednesday, I guess I will teach a Wednesday night class on how to podcast. Kind of did a mini one there. Everybody was amazed at how we do things. And it was a lot of fun. All right. So, you know, that's nice. Anyway, I got a very stern, a very stern email. And the lady wanted me to call her. She gave me her number, and I just haven't had time to call her. Lady, if you're listening, her name is Beth. Beth, if you're listening, if you still want me to call you after you hear what I'm going to say, then send me another email, and I will call you. But, I'll be happy to. This woman was furious with me because I talk about the use of chemical fertilizers and chemical pesticides, which I do. But I also, and then she even said in the email that I talk about organics. Well, I should only talk about organics and not talk about the chemical action or chemical application of anything. And I can't do that. Okay? I just cannot do that. Because sometimes, all right, let me tell you about my lawn, for instance, and all of my shrubs at my house. I am now 100% organic on my fertilizer. 100% organic on my fertilizer. I am probably 100% organic with the insecticide. Organic insecticides have come a long way. And I honestly believe that I can keep any pest that pops up on my shrubs and in my lawn taken care of organically this year. I'm reasonably, but there might be an exception. There might be an exception, but I'm reasonably sure that I can do that 100% organically. And if I had a vegetable garden, and I wish I had time to have a vegetable garden, I will have two earth box set up here very soon where I'm going to be growing some stuff here. That is all going to, the fertilizer for that is going to be 100% organic. And the pest control there on food that I eat will be 100% organic. 100%. Okay? So that is me. Now, let's get out into the real world and talk about agriculture. Organic farms have a lot of loss as far as production is concerned. Most commercial organic farms that I have seen, I've seen a bunch of organic farms, by the way, a bunch of them over the years. I have never seen one that does not have a significant amount of loss because they cannot organically control pests that get into the plants. So, I mean, they just can't. They do the best they can. They go out and they pick on things. They will trim off leaves, but it's very labor intensive. Have you ever bought organic food? It is generally quite a bit more expensive than regular food. And I'm going to tell you something else. It doesn't taste as good as food that is grown with chemical fertilizers. Oh, now I'm going to hear, oh, now this lady's getting really mad at me. She's hearing me say this now, and she's getting really mad at me. But it is the truth, because when you are chemically putting down fertilizer, you have 100% control of the nutrition that the vegetables or fruits that you are growing are going to get. You have 100% control of the minor elements. You have 100% control of the amount of potassium. You have 100%, whereas if you grow organically, you do not. So that, there is that, okay? And there, I'm going to tell you something. Eat organic tomatoes and eat hydroponic tomatoes there where they always use chemical fertilizers, and tell me what tomato tastes better. I guarantee you, you will have to admit, unless you're just absolutely crazy in the head, you'll have to admit that the hydroponic tomatoes that are grown with chemical fertilizers taste better because they have the right minerals, they have more calcium added, and it's just going to make the fruit of the tomato taste so, so much better. Just fact. It is just absolutely a fact. So, you know, and now let me tell you some other facts about organic gardening. A lot of people, because they're using manure-based fertilizers as their organic fertilizer, there's a lot of bacteria that winds up on organic vegetables and fruits. Just a fact, a lot of it there. You got to clean those plants, really, or the fruit or the vegetables, very, very well, and a lot of people don't. And there's some crazy, weird people out there who purposely does not do that. All right? I happen to have, and I'm not going to disclose who, but I have a family member who grows things organically, and this family member purposely does not clean them well because this family member has told me, by the way, this family member, I love them dearly, but they're nuts, okay? And sickly, most of the time, sickly. And not well, and they don't look well because they're eating plants with poo-poo on them and they're getting sick. There was a guy that used to live across the street from us, and he only ate organic foods. All he ate was organic vegetables. He was a vegetarian, and all he ate was organic vegetables. His wife ate meat, and she smoked cigarettes. But he, his wife, even with the cigarettes, looked surprisingly healthy all the time. Plus, she played tennis. I could not figure out how you could smoke cigarettes and play tennis, but she was a fierce tennis player. He, organic foods, was sick all the time. Okay? My opinion, you can argue with me on that, but my opinion, I do not use manure-based fertilizers on anything that I'm going to eat. I'm just not going to do it. You know, I am not going to do it. I use manure-based fertilizer on my lawn. I use Milorganite. Love that stuff. I use Milorganite on my shrubs. I love that stuff. Use it all the time. If I had a vegetable garden, I would keep the Milorganite very far away from it. And I would find other sources of organic nutrition, which I do when I do this. So, you know, and that's just the way it is. Pesticides, we'll talk about another time. Most of the time, organics work. Sometimes they don't. Most of the time, they do. I have converted myself. I'm like 100% organic here, unless I see the need. It's going to be warm tomorrow where I live. I am so grateful because it has been so cold. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Ask the Garden Geek. My name is Michael Kroos. I am your chief geek, and I'm the chief geek that is in charge of all things plants, all your botanical buddies. That's what I'm in charge of. And I am so looking forward to, for about the next 7 days at least, we will be into the low to high 70s. And that is good. I do not like winter. My relatives in Michigan and in New York, and my good friend, the Mad Dog, who's a listener to this show, had a live video on Facebook of the outside of his property, and the snow was just coming down. And I felt so bad for him. But, you know, this is how he chooses to live. And I tell you what, he's a monster. I'm telling you. Mad Dog is a monster. He knows how to do this stuff. He has equipped his house. I bet you could go into Mad Dog's house, and I bet it's toasty warm and energy efficient, and I bet he has very low heating bills because he's one of these, you know, I know how to do this kind of thing kind of guys. He's just that way. But I was looking at the video that he shot that was up on Facebook, and man, oh, that looked brutal. I remember when I lived in Michigan when I was a kid, the winter, see, most of you are not going to know about this, but Mad Dog will remember this. The winter of 1962. Do you remember that, Mad Dog? Ah, man, that was cold. That's when my dad made the decision after that winter. He says, I'm done with this. We be moving to Florida. You know, that was it. And the next winter, we hung out till the next winter, 1963. And right after Christmas, my dad loaded up the station wagon, and we drove to Florida, and we invaded my Aunt Vivian's house. She didn't know we were coming. I didn't know that my dad didn't tell. I'm young, right? But we're going to come stay a week, look things over, up in Citrus County, Florida, which is okay. So, you know, wasn't quite what we were used to, but there we were in Florida. And we looked things over, and he met a guy and bought some property from the guy while we were right there, bought some lots, and said, we're moving here in the summer. So we went back to school, finished up school year, loaded up the U-Haul and the station wagon, sold everything we owned because we weren't going to take furniture. He said, we're going to go to Florida, we're going to build a new house, and we're going to buy new furniture. That's what we're going to do. Okay. And thus began our adventure of moving to Florida in the summer of 1964. And it was culture shock, but there we were, and we moved to Florida, and I didn't have to deal with snow again until January of 1977, when I was taking the then Mrs. Kroos up to Washington, D.C., and she was born in Dunedin, Florida. She was born in Florida. And I was taking her to Washington, D.C. in January, and she was going to see snow for the first time. And we had to go to the airport early in the morning. We got up, walked out the door, and there we were in Florida, and it was snowing like crazy. Walked out to the car, and the windshield was covered with snow. The whole car was covered with snow. If you look on the internet and you type in winter of 1977, Florida, you'll find a ton of pictures of cars in the Tampa Bay area where I live, and that were just covered with snow. So, you know, I had to brush the snow off the windshield, and we headed over to Tampa International Airport, and there were snowbanks at the airport when we drove up to the old airport there. there were snowbanks. And the then Mrs. Crow said, well, I guess we can cancel our trip. I've pretty much seen this. I said, no, you haven't really seen it. But, you know, you're seeing it. But, we got to go. We already paid for the trip, got a nice hotel. We're going to Washington, D.C. We actually went up there for Jimmy Carter's inauguration. I had somehow stumbled across an invitation to the inaugural ball, which we went to, by the way, and sat next to Shirley Temple Black and her husband at the ball. That was a hoot, man. This is like, 1977. How old was I? I was young. And there is me and Mrs. Crose sitting at the same table with Shirley Temple, who I'd grown up, watching her dance with Step and Fetch It. And I said, wow, this is like really cool. And here's another interesting thing. Step and Fetch It had played at a restaurant in Battle Creek, Michigan, where my mother worked. And my mother took me to meet Step and Fetch It when I was a little kid. And I told Shirley Temple, I said, you know Step and Fetch It? She goes, yeah. I said, well, I met him at the Hart Hotel in Battle Creek, Michigan. She, wow. So we had something to talk about. Anyway, it was fun. But she did not see snow for the first time in Washington. She saw it for the first time on the way to the airport, when we left our apartment. Another quick little antidote. Yeah, I need to get into gardening, but I'm not going to. We're going to run out of time in a second. We went to the White House. We're walking by the White House. It's cold and there's snow. And this is 1977, mind you. And we're on the side of the, and she picks up a big piece of snow. And she looks at me and she goes, oh, look, honey, it's White House snow. I said, yes. And she took it and she tossed it over the fence. Don't ever do that. Okay? Don't ever do that. I'm just telling you, and I'm sure it's a lot stranger now to try and do something like that. Like within 2 seconds, literally within 2 seconds, there were 8 feet tall guys that came out of nowhere from every direction wanting to know what she threw over the fence. And she goes, snow? I've never seen snow. And I just picked it up and I said it was White House snow and I threw it over. And they're grabbing the snow and they're going through the snow. And they looked at her and smiled and said, all right, dear, it's okay. It's all right. And I said, okay. Well, we were, supposed to tour the White House, then. And I just kind of thought, I bet you they're not going to let us do that, I bet you they're just not going to let us tour the White House. They had the open tours, you could go and see parts of, with the little tour. And she didn't want to tour the White House at that time. So we went to a Smithsonian or something else. But yeah, that was just way back then. But winter is here. We're all suffering through it. But spring is just less than 60 days away. Did you know that? Spring will be here before you know it. Well, this has been a exciting segment where I have not talked one thing about gardening. Not one thing. My daughter planted a succulent in Kansas last week, and it's already starting to flower. She sent me a picture on Instagram. There, I have talked about gardening. You're listening to Ask the Gardener.